This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. I recently joined as a member and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And remember to include the name The Scoreless Thriller Podcast in your application. Thank you.
Man there trying to stop Drogba from getting himself into further trouble.
It's a fucking disgrace.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was. Carlos Alberto.
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maradona. Hudson.
Met de balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal. Heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan. Dennis Bergkamp.
Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp.
Oh! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp. Die neemt de bal feilloos aan. En hij schiet de bal erin.
Hallo? And welcome back to another episode of the Scoreless Thriller Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my trusty assistant manager, Leon, the Steve McLaren to my Alex Ferguson, the Peter Taylor to my Brian Clough, my Pat Rice to my Arsene Wenger, the Roy King to my Martin O'Neill, the black-haired guy to the Jurgen Klopp, the huge team behind Pep Guardiola. Leon, how are you doing?
This is amazing. Wow. So happy to be here. Thanks for the intro.
Yeah, and also joining us today, making a debut performance on the podcast, is Rob. Rob, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
In preparation for this podcast, I asked you to prepare two questions, you know, just to assert your football knowledge, to establish some football credentials for yourself. So
yeah.
The first question was, who was your favourite footballer when you were 10 years old?
As a footballer myself, at the time, it was probably my peak. I think after
peaked at 10.
Yeah, after turning 10, I just played it less and less, and now all I do is watch it. So, yeah, I mean, I might shock you with this answer, because you know I'm a Norwich fan.
Can I guess currently. Beforehand?
Of course, yeah.
Is it Darren Huckerby?
It's not. Now, it should be, but I have a confession to make. At the age of 10, I would have considered myself a Man United fan.
Oh my God.
Reveal.
It shames me to say, but I have to be honest, you know, in case anyone I knew listened to this, then they'd call me out on lying if I didn't come, you know, tell the truth.
I'm not sure
now.
I want you to stay on the podcast now.
It's fine, I hate them now, so it's all good.
Okay, so who anyway, was your favourite? Yeah. Roy Keane?
Yeah, no, it wasn't Keane.
Keane.
So I was a left mid in my 10-year-old peak. footballing career.
Did you steal your brother's girlfriend as well, or?
No, but yes, it was Giggsy.
So Giggs.
Giggsy. Yeah, I had a Man United shirt with Giggs on the back, number 11, and yeah, I was pretty obsessed with Giggs and how he played. I think it was kind of around the time they won the treble, I guess.
Yeah, like 99, yeah, that was the
season. So yeah, it was ever since watching it. Was it the FA Cup final he scored?
No, the semi-final.
Semi-final.
Where he runs down the wing and you're like, why doesn't any fucking Arsenal player just take him out?
Oh, yeah. But yes, it was Giggsy.
Okay, it was Giggsy. What is your favourite football match? Or what is the kind of most memorable
match? So I thought about this one quite a lot.
Okay.
So I think I kind of want to cheat and say more than one football match for different reasons. Okay. So the first match that came to my mind when you asked was the most recent one in Norwich's season this year that gave me pure joy, and that was beating Man City earlier in the season. And it was mainly because I was in a bar in Manchester watching it and the only Norwich fan celebrating as we won. So it kind of had the added element of fear to it as well, in case I was going to get beaten up.
Yeah, very dangerous setting, man.
But I loved it. Yeah, and everyone was good sport, to be honest.
Did you go full out, though? Like, celebration-wise?
Yeah, did you have a Norwich jersey?
There is video footage I can show you of me, like, jumping up in front of the big screen and stuff when the full-time whistle went off. And
it's crazy because Norwich have won like what, 5 games this season?
One of them. But yeah, enough. I don't really want to dwell on Norwich this season at the moment.
No.
But no, I think my all-time favourite Norwich game was one I actually went to. I don't know about you guys, but I think going to a game and being in the stands is a completely different experience.
Yeah, I feel like I've never had a bad experience at a live game. Like, the game could be the worst 0-0 draw, but it's just exponentially better than just watching a game on TV.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, so it was Bolton away last season, so it was when we won the championship eventually. But it was so I used to live in Manchester, and so the Bolton away fixture was one that I'd often try and get to. And I went to the same fixture a year before, and this is when the team that then went on to win was sort of just starting to form, and you could kind of see they hadn't really gelled yet, and we ended up drawing that game.
Was Lucien Favre in charge then, or was he?
Yes, yeah. Okay. So Farke had started, and it was quite early days still, so the vision hadn't quite come to fruition. But then I went back a year later for the same fixture, and it was like a complete transformation, you know. Like, it was, I just remember being in the crowd and you kind of like could hear people making noises like, oh, whoa, just so impressed with like the play that was happening. And I'd never experienced that, you know, as a Norwich
fan. To be fair, weren't like Bolton in a lot of trouble at the time?
And they did not do so well. And we won 4-0 in this game. So it was like a really confident win for the team and stuff. And yeah, really, really good memories of that day. And I think that would be my favourite Norwich game.
That was your favourite kind of experience. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
But all time, if you're asking.
Okay, all time.
So this is actually the third favourite game now.
I've got one question, though.
Okay.
Do you get more excited about club football or about national
this
team
This is an excellent segue
games.
Into my all-time favourite game. I don't think I can look at
Leon. It's almost
Leon.
As if we prepared this.
Yeah. I can't look at Leon when I say this because I feel a bit awkward.
Oh, my God.
It's the 10. It's the 5-1... qualifier England versus Germany game. So I was like really young, you know, this like
2001. So
yeah, I would have been 10 years old, and I remember watching it around a friend's house, and it was such a good atmosphere, just, you know, watching it on TV. And then I remember when the game finished, we were sort of sitting on this window ledge, and then someone called out like, "Did England win?" We're like, yeah, 5-1.
Did they ever?
singing out the window and stuff. And, but yeah, like, I find that's the game that I will be watching most on like YouTube and
stuff. Yeah, you kind of yourself draw back to watching
it. Yeah, just watching the highlights over and over because it's such a good game. But yeah, it didn't really. It was our peak, I guess, in that campaign. But it still will always be like one of those legendary games.
Yeah.
I think that's enough of me to
No, that was a very, very good, very good introduction.
I got too into it though, because you told me a few days ago, so I had too much time maybe to dwell on my
answer. No, it's good. But it's very, very different surroundings to the game and film that we're discussing today. So to mix things up on the podcast this week, we thought that we would discuss the American Samoa Australia game from 2001, where they broke the record for the number of goals scored in the game. And tied into this, I think, is my favorite. I'm not sure it's my favorite sports film, but it's definitely my favorite football film. Mm-hmm. The film Next Goal Wins. I don't know how you guys did. You guys enjoy it? What did you think of your initial reaction to the film today?
No, I genuinely enjoyed it. I think it was such a good film. It was very emotional. I loved the spirit. I loved the build up. It was very good.
It's also funnier than I anticipated. I knew it was like this kind of underdog story and all this kind of stuff, but there were so many like funny moments as well, you know.
So let's do the quiz first, and then we'll after that we'll go into the game.
Hello, my name's Danny, and welcome to Two Lads Talking, the weekly podcast where we rank a different subject each week from the worst to the best. We have Nate.
Hello.
And we have Zach.
Hello.
Get a brew, chill out tonight, and do the sucky penguin.
No,
oh, got really warm.
Me too, I'm going to have to get my fan out.
Listen to us battle it out with subjects ranging from biscuits to zoo animals.
I love the part of Nelson Mandela.
Where are you from?
Don't know.
Check us out every Thursday on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast.
Yeah, I don't think you understand, Dan. I lost my pants.
Two lads talking. Hang on a minute. There's three of us.
So welcome back to the show. This week, to celebrate the show being all about the American Samoa team and also the film Next Goal Wins, we thought we would have a quiz based on World Cup minnows and small countries around the world, and also having a bit of sort of random trivia questions about teams around the world. But because it's Rob's first time on the podcast, he's going to join up with Leon together to make a team. And
yes,
if they get the question right, they get a point. And if they get it wrong, I get a point, and we see who's winner at the end.
Very exciting.
So, sound good? Are you ready for question one?
Let's do it.
All right. That's very affirmative.
Yeah. Oh, take
it
away, Alex. Take it away.
Okay, question one. According to world rankings, who is the lowest ranked European team?
Lowest ranked European team.
Yeah, lowest in the FIFA rankings among the UEFA teams.
What about somewhere like, I know where.
Think of the micro states.
Oh, Faroe Islands. Let's go with
it's
the Faroe
Islands themed as well, right? Of course.
No, it has to be.
Yeah,
I think
okay.
Also Germany beat them once, like with a super high score.
Take Faroe Islands. Yeah.
You going with Faroe Islands?
Yeah.
I can tell you.
Final call.
Okay, I can tell you that you're wrong. The lowest ranked European team is San Marino.
Oh, San Marino.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Question number two. Togo qualified for their first World Cup in 2006. What is their nickname? A, the Black Stars. B, the Elephants. C, the Indestructible Jaguars. Or D, the Sparrowhawks.
Can you repeat?
What is the nickname of the Togo team? Black Stars, Elephants, name. Indestructible Jaguars, or the Sparrowhawks?
I feel like Indestructible Jaguars is quite a funky name to come up with just by yourself. But also highly unlikely.
Yeah, okay.
What were your first guess, though? Intuitively.
For some reason, was it the Sparrowhawks?
That was D, yes.
Yeah, for some reason that, but I could not tell you why.
Okay. Do you know, aren't there any other teams that are called, like, what's the first one?
The Black Stars.
Are these all unique team names? Like, might they be team names of some other teams?
I don't know the other. Actually, yeah, I think the first two. I know. Sorry, I'm giving away the answers.
Yes.
But yeah, I recognize at least three of them. I don't know about a fourth one.
Okay, we gotta go with the fourth one then. Wasn't that the intuitive answer?
Let's go for going for the Sparrowhawks?
The Sparrowhawks.
Sparrowhawks is correct.
Woo! Yes!
Good job, guys. 1-1. Okay.
Okay, I'll trust my instincts now then.
Question number three. The Micronesia under-23 team competed in the 2015 Pacific Games. What was their goal difference after their three games?
Should we just guess?
Yeah, a number. Okay. If it's within 20, I'll give it to you.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Okay. Wow, so it can't be that low,
I guess. After how many games?
Three.
Three? You're saying within 20? Okay, right. Well,
Was Micronesia under 20?
Under 23. So there was like an under 23 tournament that Micronesia competed in.
Okay, so this does not count to the international matches.
No, where the scale of
it's 31.
Samoa. Yeah.
It's the
highest victory that has happened. Okay, so it's probably higher.
Yeah.
Let's go 40.
I'm
per match.
42,
and then add it up. Or is 42
the
final?
We're saying per match.
Per match, man.
Yikes. Okay. Well, let's triple it then.
Yeah. Should we? I think we should. Go 100 or 120.
119.
Okay, so minus 119.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So the correct answer is minus 114. So you're five off.
Great.
So they lost.
Okay.
They lost.
Spot on.
Yeah.
So they lost one of their games against Vanuatu, minus 46-0.
Oh my god.
But the full game is on YouTube, and I watched some of it, and it's really ridiculous because so there was a group of four, and there was goal difference to decide the top team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Vanuatu have scored like their 27th goal. And they're like, it's like they've scored a consolation goal because they're just like running and grabbing the ball and sprinting back to the halfway line to go again. It's just like so ridiculous.
Whoa.
Ridiculous to watch.
I mean, that's a goal every second minute, right?
Question number four. In 2002, in protest at a refereeing decision in their previous match, Madagascar team Esso Lehemre scored own goal after own goal in their next game against AS Adema. What was the final score?
How much own goals can you manage in a minute? I mean, probably you're not as efficient and as highly motivated if you just score own goals, right? But I think I remember. I think they actually went through it like all the way. Like they didn't stop
for the entire game.
For the entire.
So we're looking
game.
At a number around 90, then I suppose.
I'm gonna have to need an answer again within 20.
Are we gonna go more than the last guess? That was 114.
But that was for four matches.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There's a slight difference here. Yeah. But I mean, okay, good. Okay, let's go something. 96.
I think we're going too many.
Okay.
I think more like 60 something.
Okay, fair enough. Then let's say 70.
So
okay,
70?
70 it is.
You were less than half, so it was 149.
No. Oh, I mean, either way, it wouldn't have been
they were
like,
very
even
busy.
Close.
Very
yeah,
busy.
The final score was AS Adema 149, Esso Lehemre.
Which is actually an impressive accomplishment, right?
But what I love when I read about this, there were some spectators at the game, and once they saw what was going on, they all rushed to the ticket office demanding their money back.
Right, yeah.
Did they get it though?
As I don't know, it didn't say in the article I read, but
yeah.
So it's still, I mean, I don't know how they scored 150
in
90
it's
minutes.
It's quite impressive.
Anyway, that's a point for me. Okay.
What's the score?
2-2.
Oh,
after four.
Exciting.
Mm.
Question five. Which city has the most clubs competing in its country's top division? A. Moscow, B. Rome, C. Tokyo, D. London.
Intuitively, I would say London.
Yeah.
I mean, the question is it that easy? Is he playing mind games?
I'm going to have to need an answer.
What were the options again?
Moscow, Rome, Tokyo, London.
Might also be Tokyo.
I think it's between those two. Let's go
with
gut reaction. Let's go with London.
London it is.
London is correct.
Yes.
Woo.
Okay, good.
You're in the lead. Question number six. In 2002, on the same day as the World Cup final, the other final took place between the bottom two teams in the FIFA World Rankings. Who won the game? A. Bhutan, B. Eritrea, C. Montserrat, or D. Solomon Islands?
I don't remember this one.
Well, you don't remember the game?
No.
Oh, not me neither.
No.
It's a shame.
I think I caught it.
Let's go with Solomon Islands.
Yeah, why not?
It's Solomon Islands.
Yeah.
It has to be, Alex. Come on, don't disappoint.
Okay, the correct answer is Bhutan. Bhutan beat Montserrat 4-0.
Okay.
There is another excellent football documentary called The Other Final, which is about this game,
right.
Well, which we might cover at some point. Anyway, that's a point for me. 3-3. Question number 7. In what country would you find FC Santa Claus? A. Finland. B. Sweden. C. Norway. D. Denmark.
I mean, I'm assuming Finland. That's my first thought. But is it too easy?
that far up north. Let's go Finland.
Yeah. FC Santa Claus.
Finland is correct.
Yes.
You're 4-3 up. Okay. Three more questions to go. Name the largest country in the world in terms of population who have never played in a World Cup. A. Bangladesh. B. India. C. Indonesia. Or D. China.
Have China been in the World Cup?
China played? I think they have once.
I don't know if he's trying to throw us off with this like population part of the question, because it's going to make us go towards China, right?
Because it's, yeah,
because it's massive, but
China is massive. Yeah. Confirmed.
But have they competed in a World Cup? I can't recall ever seeing them play.
I'm loving the pain this is causing you, Leon.
Trying so hard to remember.
Oh. I'm going to need an answer.
I mean, so far, kind of the intuitive answer was correct, right? Like with London.
Yeah,
we,
right.
We overthought this a bit too much. Maybe he's just not trying to, you know...
He's not a tricky quiz master.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
give us a wrong trail. So, still, I would say China's played, but...
You think they have?
I think they have once.
Oh, let's not go with that then. Okay, let's not go with that. We'll go India. Let's go India.
Rock,
okay.
Paper, scissors?
No, I'm happy to go India.
India is correct.
Yes.
Nice, China
man.
Played at the 2002 World Cup.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Here we go.
Okay, 5-3 in the lead. Question 9. Qatar are only the second team to host a World Cup without qualifying before. Name the first. A. South Africa. B. Switzerland. C. Uruguay. Or D. Chile. Second team to host the World Cup who have never qualified.
Can you name them again?
South Africa, Switzerland, Uruguay, or Chile?
Bafana. Go South Africa.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go South Africa.
The correct answer is Uruguay. The Uruguay hosted the first ever World Cup in 1930.
Oh,
such did not have
that's
why.
Now the tricky question
very
comes.
Good, though. That's good.
So
it's kind of a good build-up, right? Because before, you could kind of play it safe, and then suddenly, you know, he just throws you into the cold water.
Yeah. Are you ready? Okay, the last question is quite a long little novella.
Okay, what's the score?
Yeah, where
it's 5-4 to you.
Oh, my God. Oh. So this is to take the tie.
So we cannot lose.
I know.
It's a good position, right? A good fullback position. We cannot lose today.
Yeah.
All right. In Nigeria, in 2013, Plateau United Feeders and Police Machine FC went into the final league game of the season level on points at the top. At halftime, the games played simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Feeders led 7-0 and Police Machine led 6-0. How many did both teams score in the second half?
Everything about that build-up makes me think it's zero.
It's such a long build-up.
Yeah.
And also the last question.
But maybe it's a massive number as well.
But massive number would be kind of random to guess, right? I feel like zero is something that you could intuitively, kind of explain why you'd take this pick. Every other number is just random, I feel.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Happy
log
zero.
Log in zero.
I can reveal... Feeders scored 72 goals.
Oh, it was massive.
In the second half.
Yeah.
Well, Police Machine scored 61 times after the So Feeders took the title with a 79-0 win. Police Machine could only manage 67.
Did you find the matches?
Yes, and no, I wasn't able to find the footage of the game. All I could find was a news article from the Nigerian Football Federation, which was saying the games were under investigation for potential.
One wonders why.
One wonders what could have happened in the second half. Oh, so we bring this to our final scores. So we have a level score of 5-5.
That's a good start.
Yeah, that was good. That was a good, good performance so far, Rob. Good.
Thanks. Yeah, I think a lot of it was guesswork, I'm going to be honest.
So in 2001, Australia came into the game against American Samoa having played a few days earlier. They beat Tonga 22-0. And already it was kind of set that they were going to break that record and create a new record for the most goals scored in the game. And American Samoa, being the lowest team in the FIFA World Rankings, were kind of, they were already backs up against the wall and kind of imagining that they would have a very difficult situation against Australia. But then the situation was made worse by certain circumstances as well, wasn't it, Leon?
Yeah, I mean, also they haven't won a single match since they joined FIFA, right,
yeah,
in 1998. So that's kind of the setup. And then, yeah, a lot of their players weren't actually allowed to participate in that match due to passport issues. So you've got kind of this David, which is already struggling, arriving in Australia. And most of the players weren't actually able to play. So what happened was that they recruited a lot of youth players. So actually 15 years old were on the team. And they also had a couple of players who actually never had played a 90-minute match before.
Mm.
So this was kind of the setup for the whole match. And then going up against the number 75 of the whole FIFA World Cup.
Yeah, and although Australia had rested a few players, it was still pretty much like professionals close to their full team.
Yeah,
it was not, you know, and they're playing against high school players and with an average age of 18 in the team. And before the game, I think one of the coach of the American Samoa team said it was like they were praying for a miracle to at least keep the score down. And then, so we watched some of the highlights of the goals, and
they managed the first 10 minutes, right?
That's the thing, right? They keep it to 0-0 for the first 10 minutes, and then the goals just start raining in, Rob, right? It's just like minutes after
minutes. Can believe it watching the highlights, because we had to keep like kind of pausing and just checking the timer each time a goal appeared, because it was like minutes, well, like a single minute separating so many of these goals. I think when we were watching it, I was just like, so you know, is American Samoa like in possession at all in this game? Like,
yeah,
how quick, you know, it's amazing how quickly Australia were taking, you know,
possession
after, you know, after kicking off again. It's just, yeah.
And a lot of the goals are very similar in how they happen, right? A lot of them, they're not like trying, Australia aren't really trying sort of long range shots. A lot of just like, they're basically just dribbling it into the box and then just playing it across.
Or they rush through on the sides,
yeah, exactly,
and then pass it in, and then they just score. So it's kind of poor defending, it's very poor marking.
Yeah.
Which kind of shows how little tactical awareness maybe there was at that point in time with Samoa or American Samoa.
Yeah, and this is also a very important game, because for Australia, they kind of, they'd always been pushing to play in Asia, because Oceania is the only region which does not get a guaranteed World Cup place. So the winner of the Oceania region always had to play a playoff against South America or another region. And so Australia and New Zealand are like much better than the other teams in that region. Purely, you know, obviously population plays a big part in that, you know, population numbers between these countries and these tiny islands. And Australia breeze through all these games, you know, beating Tonga by 20 goals or beating teams like 10 to 15. And then they come up against a proper, you know, well-organized team against in Uruguay, who they lost to qualify for the 2002 World Cup. And they, you know, not being able to cope with the, you know, the increased quality. So as kind of as a result of this game, the Oceania region introduced preliminaries to try and stop these major differences happening. But also Australia would eventually leave the Oceania region and now play in Asia, where they get more competitive games.
Yeah.
So this is kind of used for the background for the film Next Goal Wins, where it's based 10 years on. I mean, most people who kind of follow football and stuff have kind of vaguely heard this story about American Samoa being the worst team in the world and like how funny it is. How is it possible to concede 31 goals in a game? And then so the filmmakers go and they pitch up in American Samoa for the team as they're kind of beginning to prepare for the Pacific Games. And yeah, I mean, just the stories of the whole team are just like, they immediately kind of grab you, right?
I mean, the setup is kind of what we were talking about. They were preparing for the South Pacific Games. The team spirit was kind of low. They were still all working together quite hard to actually achieve like a win after so many years at one point in time. But you could tell that it was not the most professional environment.
No. So they bring in, so their goalkeeper, Nicky, I don't have his...
Yeah, Nicky Salapu.
Okay. He lives in Seattle, right? And
yeah.
He comes back from Seattle to compete.
And you have to say he's traumatized from the match against Australia. Yeah,
right? He's the only remaining player from that 2001
right.
game.
And imagine that you're the goalie, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. You stand on the line all match and one goal after.
I read like a match report of the Australia-American Samoa game, and it gives like a lot of like commendation to him. Like they talk about like how well he did to keep the score down. Like,
and
you can see that he's quite a decent goalie relative to like, the players
definitely.
He's playing with.
But still, in the documentary, you get to know that actually people in America, they talk about him and they sometimes shit talk a bit and be like, yeah, you know, you are the one who was in goal when most of the goals happened in an international match. So, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, yeah. And he talks, I think in the interview kind of at the start of the film, he's like, I want to be on the pitch when we maybe win a game or at least score a goal, right?
Yeah.
He says, you know, he wants to be part of the team then that for the American Samoa team that actually will, you know, be the first, win their first ever game. And also, you know, score a goal in a game.
Yeah, which is kind of a very humble approach.
Yeah, so they go to the film, like the first maybe half hour is with the team, and they go to the South Pacific Games, and they still do pretty badly, right? They still lose. I think their best result is only a 2-0 defeat. There's a couple of 8-0 defeats in there, and the morale is very low. Like Nicky is like, there's a lot of sort of shots of Nicky sort of looking forlorn at the situation.
It's also very telling. I mean, after the tournament, Nicky, the goalie, who was recruited again for the South Pacific Games, he just quits. He says that this is enough. I always had this dream of winning one match with the American Samoan team, but it should not be, and this is it.
Throws in the towel,
and it's very sad. Like him, you know, you could see like the shot of him kind of walking away from it, just like, I've given so much to this American Samoa team. You know, I have so much pride in where I'm from, but I can't come back for another more. Like I can't take more time off work to go fly thousands of miles to play for this team again.
Right.
You know, it's time for the baton to sort of be passed on to someone else.
Yeah.
So then it goes back to the team in American Samoa, and they're dealing with this earthquake. Very, you know, in the aftermath of these games, there's an earthquake which hits,
and it's tsunami especially, which it was just calamity that just completely destructs a lot of the buildings everywhere on the island. But the players, you can kind of see the spirit of the players when immediately afterwards they go to the pitch, they try to rebuild everything. Just so that they can keep on playing football.
Yeah,
so you've got
training,
this team that loses match after match after match, but still the first thing that they think of after, you know, something grave as this has happened, they go back to the pitch, they want to train again. And so, yeah, that's how high their spirits still were, which is incredible, yeah.
So American Samoa put out like a call to the US Football Federation a couple of months before their World Cup qualifiers. Okay, can we get some help?
For help, yes.
Can we get some training and stuff? And I think it's also pointing, like, Thomas Rongen isn't the first sort of foreign or they use a phrase, you know, like, there's a phrase that they use for white people who sort of, like, flow in and they come in and try and teach them football.
We can fix this.
Yeah, we can fix them. But they don't really sort of ingratiate themselves in the culture and it's sort of, like, the greats and stuff like that. And then it doesn't work out. So then Thomas Rongen comes in, and it's safe to say from like the moment he appears on the screen, he's like, you know, the people who sort of shot this documentary are like, okay, now we've got a winner, right? If they've got Thomas Rongen on stage.
But he was the only applicant.
Yeah.
For this call up, right? And something I noticed that he was the only person who kind of responded to this, and it makes you wonder, you know, what was his kind of motivation to step in and do this? You know,
I mean,
a huge challenge.
Yeah.
Right? Huge.
But I mean, he's achieved a lot in America, right? Like, he's won the MLS once.
Yeah.
He was also one of the coaches that were actually part of the inauguration league, like the first league and everything. So I feel like he's got all the experience and maybe also has achieved all the goals that he had in America. So he was up for a new challenge. And I mean, he also talks about this daughter dying and that he wanted to find some space and some environment where he could give back something and actually kind of channel this love and this all his talents that he had in a way that would bring
maybe love, but also happiness and achievements to other people.
So. And I think it's also the film works so well in that because when he comes on screen, he's very abrasive, and you see him sort of rubbing up against the American Samoa culture with the thing with them going to church in the evenings and stuff like that. And you're not quite sure whether you want to sympathize with him as a character, right? Because he's very, you know, very in your face, and
very dominant.
Yeah, dominant and kind of abusive to them and stuff like that. And then slowly over time, you see through the film him building this relationship with the players, and then building this kind of trust, and them kind of realizing that he's okay, even though he's here for a short time, he's not just doing this for like a quick pay packet or just like a thingy that he can put on his CV. Yeah, he actually does care about them creating some kind of story.
Yeah, because I feel like at first I was a bit scared, because most of the Samoan players, it seemed like they had a lot of fun playing the game and also training for the competitions, and he came there with a very professional approach. So you're kind of left thinking whether this works out, whether this can be combined. But yeah, throughout the documentary, you actually get to know that this is possible, this synthesis.
And even like, it's pointed out that a lot of the players are also working at other jobs, you know, throughout the day. So when he's describing their training schedule, they have to arrive at 5 in the morning, train before work, go do a full day's work, and then come back at 5 p.m. and continue. And like, that's, you know, credit to them, you know, having that, you know, endurance to be able to, you know.
Yeah, and what I enjoy about the documentary is it begins to sort of flesh out the characters of the team. So along with Nicky, so the goalkeeper from the 2001 team, who has all the scar tissue, another hugely important character in the team who the film does good at sort of fleshing out is Jaya Salua, who belongs to something which exists in Pacific culture called the Fafafina, which is a third gender. So although her passport name is Johnny, she goes by female gender characteristics, and as such you kind of see her being accepted by the team, and you kind of like this sort of like this story which begins to be fleshed out from the team, and it's like, oh, this really interesting story of she goes on to being the first transgender footballer to play in a FIFA World Cup match, and you kind of see how the team interact with her. And also Thomas Rongen is sort of, you see, I think the really good thing about Thomas Rongen joining the film is that he acts almost as kind of like a conduit for the viewer for the film, that you kind of begin to see the island and the team through his eyes, rather than it being a very sort of like superficial understanding of the team and how he builds relationships with these players, and also how they interact with him.
Yeah, because he himself struggles at the beginning, right? And then he actually manages to build these relationships and stuff. So yeah, it takes, yeah, you're completely right, it takes the viewer on the hand.
So along with Nicky joining from the States, they call in two other interesting characters from the States who have American Samoan background.
That's right. Yeah. So there was Ralston, right? He was headhunted, I guess, yeah. Right, by Thomas, who has his grandparents were from American Samoa, and so he was able to play on the team through that nationality, but he'd always lived in the US. But you know, his story is very interesting, because you know, being called up for this was like his way of going back to his, you know, his family roots.
Yeah, and, he talks, you know, about his grandfather who left the island, who so he's crying when he finds out that his grandson is actually going to be able to go back to American Samoa and represent his country. And also there's Ramon Oates, whose wife is about to give birth, and he's in the army, and he's like he gets the call up and it's like, well, I love football, and if I have this opportunity to go back and represent American Samoa and try and create something history, he's like, okay, well, I've got to take it.
Yeah. And it's highly interesting, because that's kind of the reality that a lot of American Samoans face, right? Because of economic hardship, they don't have a lot of opportunity to actually maybe earn the living that they want to earn. And so a lot of them sign up for the military, for the US military, to have this opportunity to build a different life.
So yeah, so the team, you see the team with Thomas Rongen over the course of a month sort of building up, and they think building up their quality before they go off to play in the World Cup qualifying games. And also we should mention that Nicky Salapu had actually retired and was like saying he was done, but he gets the call from Thomas to come back and play for the team, and he's like, I think there's something special going on here that maybe I want to be part of this. So then he
the goalie is back again.
Yeah,
once he goes more.
Back, he's like back for one last ride, you know.
And all in all, I feel like all this adds up, and it feels like the turnaround, right?
Yeah,
like now you feel everything is possible. They might actually make something happen.
Mm. Yeah, like I've never been so invested in a sports team like represented on film.
No, you know what I mean? I totally agree. Yeah. But also because their personality shines through
so much,
right?
You can
relate.
You have like Jaya and you have like Nikki.
You feel connected to them.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And then also you feel kind of connected to the whole community, right? Because even the priest gives them their blessing and tells that they do well.
And so, he talks about like, what was he talking about? David and Goliath. And like, them going to play against the other island nations and like, stuff like this. It's super cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then so they go off to play the World Cup qualifying game tournament. And Rangoon gives a speech before the game starts, which includes probably my favourite quote from the film.
Yeah, I've got this just in my notes. Thomas says he would cut off his penis in order to play in World Cup qualifiers, right? So it's to try and inspire the team and make them realise, I guess, how privileged they are to be going to
I don't think he said this to be like funny. But the guys
he's genuine, man. Yeah. He would actually, he's got this button as well, man. If someone would have told him, okay, if you do it, you can jump off the team, the penis would have been off, man.
And the guys on the team are just like cracking up. Like, they're also like, they're sort of like, who is this crazy guy? He was just like so into it. But yeah, so they start, their tournament starts with a game against Tonga.
Yeah.
And so the game starts and they actually score their first goal with this sort of long range shot by Otten, the goalkeeper.
It was a howler, man. Finally I get to say it. It was a howler. So yeah, it kind of bounces against the head of the goalie.
And the goalkeeper sort of dives too far and it sort of goes in.
Yeah,
like,
and then it just goes in.
And then like the celebrations are mad. It's like they've won the World Cup. Like it's spread over to the bench.
They're all piling on each
other. I was off my seat and they're like,
the relief, the happiness,
like, this is
the emotions.
Yeah, so good. So they not content.
But it's not it's not just the goal though, right? It's also their performance.
Yeah.
Like you could tell that they could have these, you know, triangular passes and would do the runs and everything. Like you feel like this is a proper football team playing a match and having a match plan. So you could really, really feel the influence of Thomas Rongen and also of all the effort and all the sweat and maybe all the tears that these players have put into the preparation. So it is very, very inspiring.
In such a like quick amount of time as well, so, like 3 months or something, and then
about a month.
Yeah, and just in that they transformed into a team that starts playing. You know,
while all of them had to work.
Football.
Yeah,
whilst they all had jobs.
Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they score one goal, and then they score a second one in the second half, where Luani goes out through and scores, like lobs the goalkeeper, and this guy, what's it, Shalom Luani. He actually plays in the NFL, like in American football now.
Really?
He's a professional NFL player.
No way.
What?
Wow.
So he plays for Houston Texans in the NFL.
Amazing.
Yeah,
so
that's
super
incredible.
Crazy. Because I think also there are quite a few sort of in the NFL American Samoan, like American Samoan descent who play American football because of the connection and stuff. So yeah, so they take their 2-0 up and then they concede and they're just like hanging on for like the last 20 minutes.
Oh, but their fitness problems.
Yeah.
You can see them, their cramps. Yeah. People are lying on the pitch. They really
they're fighting
and they're giving it all they have, but it gets tougher and tougher.
Yeah, that's the first time you can really see that they, you know, reality kind of set in.
Right in the last minute, Tonga have the chance to level it to stop American Samoa getting their first ever win, and then Jai is there to clear it off the line.
Off the line, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's crazy. And then the celebrations afterwards are just so, like, intense.
And I mean, the coach actually says that she's the woman of the match, right?
Yeah. I think she has the... because I think in one of the pictures afterwards, she has, a medal thing on. So I think she won player of the match.
Yeah.
Which was, super cool, obviously. And then, you know, the celebrations afterwards, they're, like, people are in tears and... I had a little bit of, like, the first time I saw this film, I had a bit of a tear, something.
This time as well, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I was at this time as well. Yeah, it doesn't take too much to make me cry in a movie. But, and then it's super cool, the celebrations, and then, and then now they actually have a chance of going through to the next round of the qualifying.
Yeah. And for that, they actually, the coach said that it's fine for them to draw the next match.
against Cook Island, and that's actually what happens, right?
But yeah, so it sets up this grudge match, which he sets up. He calls it like the Classico. The Classico of American Samoa versus Samoa. And so it's
the
nil,
derby.
It's nil-nil. You see they're playing super hard. You know, they're fighting for, like, I think Samoa are a little bit better, but they're still, like, the training is sort of kicked in and they're...
It feels really very physical.
Yeah, very physical, and it's very in the game. And they go through right at the end, and they have a shot which just trickles and hits the post.
It hits the post. So close. So they nearly scored, American Samoa. But then immediately Samoa takes the ball. They do the counter attack. It's really quick. And they're actually in the dying minutes.
You can see it coming, though, right?
You could see it coming. They score. So that's the loss. That's the defeat. That's the end of the dream.
Of the team.
And it is bittersweet again. Yeah. And it made me think of what we talked about before, how sometimes when a team actually does not manage to get to the final stage of whatever they were aiming for, and it's kind of a bittersweet ending to the tournament performance, how it gives shines an extra spotlight on their performance and on their how they try to actually achieve what they were aiming for. And I feel like this applies to this.
I think also if their win had been like their last game, would the film have a very sort of different feeling? Because then it would have ended them with sort of triumphant crescendo,
like a consolation sort of thing.
That they had got their first ever win. But rather with this, it had like the sort of 15 minutes before the end, it had the emotional climax of the film of like, oh, they've got the victory.
Yeah.
But then there was still time for that little bit of heartbreak right at the end.
Yeah.
Which was, and then so the team sort of breaks up, and Thomas Rongen is very sort of emotional about the situation, and going back to the States, and the team are sort of breaking up now, but then they've sort of achieved this incredible thing, which was like in the newspapers all around the world, that the worst team in the world had finally won a game, and they're like so full of pride, and the official from the federation is crying at the end, when he's talking about that he won't see them at the very bottom of the rankings.
Yeah.
And it's so good as well, because you saw him having quite an open argument with Thomas Rongen earlier in
the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. And now he's like so happy.
Big reconciliation at the end. Yeah. No, he actually said that now when he looks at the ranking, he doesn't scroll up from the bottom, but he actually starts from the top and goes down until he sees American Samoa.
No, it's really, like, really beautiful. Very pure and very just, I think, just, like, leaves you with a bit of a kind of glow at the end.
And especially because you know what this means to the community and to the players and to their personal histories and stories, right? Mm. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Taking home this win and this performance. And showing them what they can do also. I mean, this doesn't have to be the end of whatever happens with American Samoa's football history, but it still showed them that there is the opportunity that when you train, when you've got the right tactics and stuff, you can achieve something. And I think this spark of hope is something that's super important.
So I found out recently it's been made into a sort of Hollywood
comedy. Due to be released later this year, I think. Directed by
Taika Waititi.
But yeah, I think that was a really interesting story, and I really enjoyed covering this as a sort of difference to just a sort of typical football game, to actually sort of like a documentary.
I enjoyed it a lot.
Me too. Mm. Yeah, I it was a story I hadn't heard much about before, it was suggested. And yeah, it's amazing. I'm going to be recommending it to all my football buddies, and
cool. Definitely. Great stuff. So thanks for joining us this week on the podcast. Not sure what's coming next week. Maybe we might be changing sort of a different game to look at, but have a look out for it. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating and review. Rob, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week.
Woo! Thanks for having me, fellas. Had a really good time.
Yeah, it was very good having a sound man. Rob is sort of set up our whole sound.
I hope you can hear it, guys.
Yeah. Otherwise, Rob's
going to be ashamed. We blame Rob if this is worse. Yeah.
And thanks again, Leon, as always. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure.
All right, thanks for joining us, guys, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. Subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Social Podcast Network.